Bad cousin, good cousin, naughty and nice. Let the former prevail, let the latter turn to ice. Bad cousin, good cousin, naughty and nice.
Princess!
Hush! I don't want to miss a single rivulet of blood.
Bad cousin, good cousin, naughty and nice. Bad cousin, good cousin, naughty and nice.
The former prevail, turn to ice. What a prize my Kay has turned out to be. I couldn't have cast a more diabolical spell myself at the height of my wicked powers. Charity is doomed, as is her love life with Miguel. Talk about a hot romance gone cold.
Welcome to Passions for Life. I'm your host, Natalie Z, Travis Schultz, and Surgeon General of the United States, Benjamin Hayes, where we pull back the curtain on the show you always denied watching.
Passions.
Well, obviously, I am not Natalie Z, although I do fantasize about it, but I am Travis Schultz. Natalie Z is away. She's working. And we have someone new with us. You guys are familiar with him. He's our producer. And he is our friend and dear, dear confidant, Valentine.
Keep it going, Travis. Keep it Mealy. Going.
Yeah, this is great. Thank you. Yeah, it's me.
Sweet, sweet friend.
Yep, I'm a fine human being. Thank you. I'm nervous about being here and covering for the big N, the big Z.
The big N-Z.
I'm going to step in and do what I can. I don't know any. I was not there when these episodes were made. I have nothing to do with this, with Passions.
Right.
So it's like all the background shit's going to have to be your thing because I'm out on that.
Yeah.
You know, I think we got it mostly covered.
That's
okay, great.
I got that stuff covered. And you just, I mean, what are you going to cover? I don't know. I'm just gonna
do what I do, man, and I'm gonna make it do what it do. Yeah, exactly.
Just let it happen.
I'm gonna let it happen. I wrote a lot of notes. Like I did a really good, like, studious job of covering. So I hope that I can bring, a portion of the amount of joy that Natalie brings to the listeners.
I like that.
Did you fall asleep?
I did not. I did not fall asleep. I checked my phone a couple of times. That's true. You know.
Were you drunk?
I had an IPA, but that was it. So no, I can drink way more than that, as you're both well aware.
Okay.
The other cool thing but I did find, like, I found 1/3 of this episode, like, totally my shit. So I was really, this is episode 624
that we're going into. Let's tell everyone what we're talking about. Yeah, let's get some
But I mean, also, I shouldn't just jump into that either, should I? Are we going to our week?
Let's catch up.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think that people are probably most interested in what's going on with you, Travis, and your further Australian adventures.
In my adventures, down under. I'm going on walkabout. My stomach is better. That's nice. You know, we're definitely settling in down here. Natalie is busy as hell. There is one thing. Everywhere you go, guys. Everywhere you go, NXS.
Like
the stores. There's always an NXS song, man. I mean, and I'm a fan. Like, I grew up just, those guys were on my walls, you know, in my room, my teenage room. But I was like, okay, you guys,
Michael Hutchins taught us that sometimes you kick and sometimes you get kicked, you know?
Yeah.
He'll give you what you need. He's going to give you what you need.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny. I notice it. I'm like, oh, yep. There it is. There it is.
Is it like it plays more than any other music in Australia to you?
Yeah. I mean, it's in the, it's in the Rolodex of songs in restaurants, in store, shopping, Kmart's and as well as the gym. I mean, it's so, like, the Australian playlist.
They feel comfortable ignoring the fact that he killed himself through autoerotic asphyxiation, I guess.
That makes it better.
Yeah, you know, I talked to a guy who believes that a lot more people have done that than we know.
Yeah, man, I don't like.
I feel like it crosses
over somewhere between urban myth and possibility. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like I mean, I'm a pretty like, you know, straight down the middle road kind of guy. That seems kind of like, it's wild to me that like, if people are dropping dead left and right because they're choking themselves when they crank it, that seems far out to me.
Very dangerous. Listen, it's very dangerous. I tried it once. Yes. By accident.
I don't want to make this comparison because it shames me, but would you say NXS is like the Red Hot Chili Peppers are in Southern California? Like, you can't get away from them?
Is that true, though? Do you hear the Chili Peppers everywhere?
Yes, every radio station. Country stations play them. Jazz stations.
Oh, wow.
You think that's a California thing?
I think so, but I mean, I don't like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and I hear them everywhere. I can't.
I can tell you that in like 2000, in the year like 2000 or 2001, when like all the they were trying to like build the mythology of Danny California or something.
Oh, why'd you even bring that up? It's horrible.
Sorry, you're talking about the Chili Peppers. That shit would play in, because I was working construction and that was in heavy rotation. Like, you would hear that song 15 times a day easily in like the 8 hours of work. So it's not just my point is, it's not just in Southern California.
All right. We're getting into the weeds. Let's move on.
Deeply into the weeds. So anyway, Travis, in your travels this week, you have, your stomach has healed. You have heard NXS.
Yeah. Yep. I hear NXS everywhere I go. Yeah. I mean, not much to report, really. That's the big thing is, that I'm feeling better.
Good.
Yeah. What about you? What's your guys' week like, Ben?
Well, we're wrapped, so I'm enjoying hiatus.
You got time.
I got time. Been scheduling little meetups here and there, coffees, happy hours. Went actually with Valentine yesterday to get a sandwich, which doesn't sound that exciting just if you look at that sentence, but the sandwich was amazing.
Yes, Gamboge here in Los Angeles, down on Broadway.
Yeah.
Cambodian spot. Good stuff.
It was very good. And now I can't wait to go again.
Yep. That's how it is, man. Look, yeah. That guy's flavors are fantastic.
Yeah.
Hack Lone is the proprietor. And he's terrific.
Also I want to point out that this is an unofficial reunion of the Hot Boys Movie Club.
Yeah. Oh, yes, it is.
Was the final Hot Boy movie night Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? Oh, no. It was Color Out of Space.
Yeah, Val, you might want to explain how you came up with the name Hot Boy Movie Club.
Well, I think it seems very straightforward. It's a riff on Hot Girl Summer. Not much more. Except, I wish I could make it something else, but it's not.
I'll take it.
And nothing else. So anyway, what happened this week, Ben? Like, what's it going on? You're just off hiatus and that's it?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's basically, I go have a sandwich with you. I'll go have a coffee with a friend. I'll go have a happy hour with someone else. It's hiatus, baby.
And from what I'm reading, California's doing really well. Yeah. I mean, like, you guys went inside, had a sandwich, that kind of stuff.
This is an outside patio, but they've opened some stuff up here in California. I mean, we're still, you know, a month away probably from being properly open. But the weather's been hella nice, and we have a $75 billion surplus, we're happy. You know, it's been all right. As for me, there was a sandwich. Let's see, there was a sandwich. It was a sandwich. It was a burrito this week. Sometime I've been exploring more positivity and gratitude, while at the same time just steaming that my wife won't clean more in the house. Dying for the day when everybody goes back to school and work, so I can have like just 5 minutes alone. You know, mostly things are good, and happy to be alive. Truly, yeah. Shall we talk passions?
Yeah, let's get into it.
So, what we decided here, since we have no Natalie, we decided that we'd kind of pick and choose, find something that we wanted to cover, and I mean, it's pretty silly, but I just like basically Googled craziest supernatural storylines. And this one was top five every time, which was charity turning into evil charity.
I can see why. before we even get started, let me tell, because I haven't had a chance to talk about these characters with you guys and everything.
Yes.
I find Charity so attractive, and evil Charity is hot as fuck in my book. that's what I have to say about that.
Yeah. That is, I get it, man. I get it.
Right?
I mean, she's really great in this episode. And that's what I wanted to talk about too, like how her choices as evil Charity were so spot on. And it's like one of those things I want to just pick her brain about it, just like her approach.
Before we go forward, can I just sort of like give a quick, because this is nice and easy because there's only like three spaces, three timelines in this episode.
Totally.
So there's one, which is Teresa at the book cafe struggling about whether or not to abort the love child of Julian Crane. Right?
The Julian love child.
The second one is the interminable phone call, the Star 69 fail between the Lopez Fitzgerald kitchen and a boat in the Bermuda Triangle, right? Does that sum that up?
Yeah.
Yep.
With Brian and
Sheridan. Off the coast of St. Lisa,
of course, yeah. That's got Luis and Pilar and Brian and Sheridan. We'll get back to Brian. That cracks me up. And part three, which is the part that rules, when Kay is bleeding out the face and using black magic to imprison Charity in a block of ice while Tabitha. The
Book of Spells.
Yeah.
Yes, the Book of Spells. While Tabitha cheers on and narrates from the bushes.
Yes, those are the three arenas. I say we go in order of least interesting to most interesting. So let's start with the phone call.
Yes.
Luis. Luis.
We're on the same page.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Why is he on the floor? They have chairs.
Yeah. You know, I was so. Yeah. Did he drop it?
I don't know what happened in the episode in 623.
No. Pilar fainted. She fainted.
Oh, right. Mama, you fell down and banged your head. Yeah.
It was a voice that she hadn't heard. She didn't. Yeah, that's what it was.
Right. Because the whole scene is no, it was Antonio. No, it was Sheridan. No, those are the two arguing over who was on the phone.
It was like the worst version of a who's on first I've ever seen. Like just interminable. It just wouldn't stop.
Well, the other thing is I have to say, and I've kind of like been on the sidelines for the 8 months that we've been doing this, like watching little bits of stuff. But this is like one of the like apotheosis high points of something that I've believed this whole time. And that's just that Luis seems nuts. He always seems nuts.
Yeah.
And I started writing that at the beginning of this particular scene. And then later I found in my notes in giant letters, Luis so fucked up.
Yeah.
It's a strange character.
He does seem like almost like a Hitchcock hero who, you know, eventually will find out that he's been right, but that he's being gaslit the whole time. Like the wife's dead. You're seeing things, you're hearing things, and someone's doing this to drive him insane. Except there's no nefarious plot. It's just truly like she's in Bermuda.
And it seems to be like, you know, so if you're reading it from a non, if you have no sexual attraction to Luis at all, you're just, that's all you're getting is like, what is up with this guy? He seems nuts, and he seems like he's discovering, like a dog, like discovering things over and over again, one moment at a time.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, it's like, if you find him attractive, it's doubly attractive because he seems a little brain damaged and weird, and it has a little more of a sexual charge.
Yeah. Oh, what this scene does is I see what they're trying to do. They're like, it's the cursed lovers, the fate of these lovers. And it just, your patience runs out because you're just like, there's no buildup. You're just like, oh, if they're so close to talking to each other on the phone, and then they'll know that they're alive and they're, you know, it's
look, if you were telling the
story. No, it's supposed to be like tantalizing or something, and it's not. It's just
It's supposed to be this like, it's just like, they're almost talking, and you're just kind of like, well. I mean, because you're supposed to just ache for them. You're just like, can't they just be together? Because they can't.
Yes.
You know, and it's just really hard to because, you know, it's a phone call. It's
We all know people who I call calamity magnets or disaster magnets, where it's like just bad things happen to them over and over. And after a while, you're like, clearly you did something to piss off, you know, Fortuna, Jesus, Buddha, whoever. If you were telling the story of Sheridan and Luis, you'd be like, that's the gods telling you guys to not be together. I mean, there's a lot of obstacles that they have thrown in between the two of you.
Well, I do have a legitimate and sincere narrative question here. All right. A couple of things. Let me tell you what I think is going on. And you guys tell me exactly. All right.
Okay.
The Brian is Antonio Lopez Fitzgerald, right? Mm-hmm. Who, despite seeming to come from the American South, comes from the Lopez Fitzgerald family.
Really is confusing.
Yeah,
it really.
My life.
Put that phone down. Put that fucking phone down.
Put that phone right here. Yeah, no. And so Antonio is down there with a Sheridan who is amnesiac with who thinks she's Diana.
Yes.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And then Pilar and Luis are on their kitchen floor. Diana. Yes, yes. She thinks she's Princess Diana. Does she really think she's literally Princess Diana?
Well, that's the thing. Like, why did they pick that name?
Yeah, I mean, I know it's obviously a shadow thing.
Yeah,
but
was her best friend.
But she's not like walking around being like, when I was in Buckingham Palace, it wasn't like this or anything. Like, okay. So then the other two are in the kitchen, right, back home. But this, like, remember there was the thing about the swimming pool and, like, they're calling it a swimming pool. So there was some sort of interdimensional shit going on. This is just legitimately straight, right? There's a phone. There's a, like, they're both holding the phone for, like, 20 minutes, and that's what's happening.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I think it's all right there. I mean, and then they throw in the candle thing at the end. Did you see that?
Yeah.
No.
Now it might be the next episode, Travis. Val, were you trying to do the James Vanderbeek from Varsity Blues?
What do you mean?
When with the Texas accent, when James Vanderbeek's talking to his coach and he's like, "I don't want your life."
No. There's a Brian / Antonio says something my life at some point.
I thought maybe
it's like super broad, like almost.
That's stay out of my life or something like that.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I'd like to point out that if you're holding, if each party's holding the phone up and they haven't hung up, they're effectively on speakerphone. Like, I don't know.
I did notice that they were covering the thing.
They were palming
the mouthpiece.
I see. I miss that too. I miss that too, Ben. It looked like they were just kind of like waving the phone around willy nilly.
Yes. Yes.
So wait, so Antonio left home a long time ago and now he goes by Brian?
Yeah. And
okay, moving on.
Yeah. Which is also his grandfather's name or something. Yeah. You can tell this guy's a real dick too. Like,
I was gonna say that guy seems like a real asshole.
Oh, it's been confirmed. Like, yeah.
Oh, you mean the actor? The actor himself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like,
no, because the it bleeds into the character. I wrote down right here in my notes. Brian seems like a huge asshole.
Exactly. Totally. I'm like, man, this guy.
I wrote to defend him a little bit. I'm with Antonio / Brian. Sometimes you don't owe your family shit.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's true. You know, even a broken cock is right twice a day, Ben.
That's right. Yes.
That is the saying, I believe.
Broken clock, Brian.
I think too, what you see, because the same scene's happening, you know what I mean? Like Pilar and Luis are doing it, and then Brian and Sharon and Diane are doing it. But this is where I like want to point out Mackenzie's acting. She's so good in this scene.
Yes, she is.
Because she just stays grounded.
Yes, she does.
She's just like, what? Let me talk to him. She doesn't make it about the phone. She's just like, puts the phone down and she says, look, I want you to reconnect with your family. It was so sincere and so personal. It that's what made that side of that story more real to me. And then it's like you said, Val, like Luis just seemed like a crazy person, you know?
Yeah.
And
it was he's always doing that sort of like half smile, like, it's Sheridan. I just know it and everything's going to be okay. Right. It's like real.
Well, it's also just like a hard scene to do. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things that you do in, like you should do in an acting class. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like a beginning acting class.
Yeah. But you're absolutely 1,000,000% right about Mackenzie. It's really impressive and really interesting that she is able to like sit there in the dressing room and look at the script and be like, I just kind of like just be emotionally real, just kind of ground myself and talk with him. And like, she comes out of it unscathed. When like that kind of shit can just eat you up and spit you out, which it does constantly. Right. Part of the fun of this show is how frequently people get chewed up and spat out. I thought you were very good this episode. No joke.
Well, this episode for me was, it made me sick to my stomach because I was reading this stuff and I was like, this is fucking propaganda bullshit. Like, I was just like, this is so gross. Just the way they talk about abortion and.
Yeah. So are we transitioning to this?
It seems like it. You want to walk us into it, Ben?
I was just going to say that. You know what I mean?
Does anybody have anything else to say about that ridiculous telephone scene?
Only that the Starry Night was a little too much on the boat. Like,
I actually loved it. It was so shitty that I got into it. I was like that. I was mesmerized. Like, I was like looking past them at the psych behind them.
Me
like,
too.
What's going on with that wall?
It looked like the intro to Cosmos with Carl Sagan. Like you're going through. It was terrible.
Oh man. Yeah.
I do want to know though. I mean, we'll get down this fast. How did Antonio become Brian? Does anybody know?
No.
Okay, great. So there we go. That's open. We'll open that door. We'll put that on the floor for the listeners. I'm coming in late. I don't know who this guy is.
He talks about it in the next episode. He does say that it's something to do with like him resenting his family, so he took his grandfather's name, his favorite grandfather's name.
Brian Lopez Fitzgerald.
Of the Lopez.
Yeah, he's like,
my mother named me Antonio.
Kevin Lopez Fitzgerald,
Yeah, in the second episode, he's...
We'll get there. All the questions will be answered.
All will be revealed.
With that, let's go to the book cafe, where we've got
The book cafe.
Yeah.
You mean sad cafe?
Yeah, the sad cafe where
cry cafe.
Yeah, where we have some young adults and teens discussing the.
What's going on in there is Teresa and Whitney have a friend who's considering an abortion, and it's very triggering to Teresa because she is considering aborting Julian's baby, and Ethan is off on the side talking about how bogus abortion is and says the best line of the episode, which is when he's like, you can't, you know, it's really messed up to make a girl get an abortion before they're ready.
Yeah.
Did you catch that? Before they're ready.
Did not.
Yeah.
Like I do not. I.
That's in the cold open. That's before the credits even. You're like talking to Don and you're like, you know, it's really messed up to do that before they're ready. And I was like, I don't even know if the writer knew what they intended there. Just a bad sentence.
I mean, there's also the fact that I might have said it wrong.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, never discount that possibility.
How do you get an abortion if you're not ready, I guess?
That's what I mean. Like, how do you know when they're ready?
Right.
We're ready. Oh, no, it's a mess. The way this was treated was just horrendous. Horrendous. Yeah. It was like completely just to shock and freak people out. You know, 100%.
I couldn't watch it. It turned my stomach. I found myself just wanting, just I would look at my phone because I'd just be like, I can't watch this again because it upset me so much when I was doing it. And just how not a lot of it, but there's a couple of scenes where Chad and Ethan are weighing in on what Lynn needs to do and all that. It was just like, you know what her problem is.
Well, there was also that one section where they kind of gang up on her. They're both like, that part, when they were talking together, I'm like, look, people do this. I can deal with that, you know? But when it's like the two of them sort of evangelizing at her at the same time and being like, yo, you know, I don't know if this guy's worth it and everything. It's like, you should probably not get involved in this at all.
Yeah. I know. It was so gross.
Hey, Travis, can you tell us who Lynn is? Is she just a friend?
Yeah, Lynn is just, you know, a plot tool. They just brought her in.
She came in as the crisis person.
Right.
she's like a central reflector in this case, right? Everybody is talking. The whole scene is about what everybody thinks of her plight.
David Mamet would love that.
I have to say though, I wrote down Lynn is good. I thought that having to do what that actress had to do relative to the whole situation. I was like, she did a good job. She was good.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah, you just can't do much. You can't do that much with that part. You just have to like play it as is, because if you try to make it about you, it's not gonna come across. It's not gonna work.
Exactly. She didn't at all. She did, again, very much like Mackenzie, just kind of like other directed. Like, I'm really trying to communicate here, you know? And she was real good. I created a new sniff test that we'll discuss later. In my head, I was like, this is how I will forever evaluate the actors on the daytime drama Passions and whether they are good or bad. I'll give you my measure later. We'll talk about this after we're ready. Yeah.
So one of the things that I think, because Natalie's not here, we should probably talk about Teresa's hair.
Before you do anything, yeah. I have nothing but praise written down here for the way that Teresa was styled in this episode.
It was kind of cool.
I wrote, Teresa looks fly with that styling.
Yeah.
Strong Brian Eno in Roxy Music 1971 vibes with the collar on that jacket. I thought she looked good as hell.
And the hair was kind of like that skater girl, Avril Lavigne, early 2000s, kind of messy. I don't know if they're not braids, but like little mini.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
I remember,
you guys are digging on Teresa. Wow.
But that's the other thing that I want to say. It was like, this is truly, it was the aesthetics of it. Like, she's not like a type that I'm into, but I was like looking at how she was styled in this whole thing. And also, like, Lindsay's just got a really cool face. Like, you know, like the lines of her face. She's an incredible camera subject. And I was like, damn, she looks really cool, you know, in this episode.
Yes.
She looks great.
And she cried.
All the time.
But that's like every episode, right? That's literally every episode.
I wish I would have cried in this episode.
Yeah, you should have, because you come across as a guy who's working at a pregnancy crisis center.
No. I'll tell you what, Travis. Always wear a scarf, dude. Always. 100%.
You think so?
Yes. I'm not even kidding. It brought back, it made me remember, I think that at my wedding, which was like, whatever, 12 years ago, I think you might have worn an ascot. Did you wear an ascot to my wedding?
No. That didn't happen.
That was, if anyone, that was Nick.
Yeah, but no, because Nick was going, I think Nick went with like open to the navel kind of situation.
Nick always brings it. I changed the name of the book cafe to Estrogen, Espressos, and Everything Else. Because it like the music too. Everyone's crying and,
And Whitney's doing that thing of like, they give her, we're going to give you a list of 51. We're going to give you one sentence that you say 51 ways for 39 minutes, man. That poor girl.
So
God
mean
damn.
To each other. They were so mean to each other in that scene too. It's just like, what are you doing? And I'm like, this is making me uncomfortable.
That whole space, the whole book cafe was uncomfortable. But I thought that you and Lynn were both good in those scenes. I know that you probably hate seeing yourself, but I was like, there he is again doing it good. And but there is the fucking button. I smiled so hard that my head almost flipped off backwards off of my body. When you like pop in and hear her on the telephone at the very end. Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. That was great. I love that. The staging, I think there might have been a tiny camera move. I was like,
look at him go. I did notice that in the scene, Lynn is sitting there with me and Chad, and she says something. She says, like, it was like about her boyfriend, you know, because he's in law school or something. And it's the end of the scene, and I bring my hand to my mouth, and I'm like, oh shit, was I laughing?
Could be. At the ridiculous,
because I was just like,
"This
dude, you totally looked like you looked like you were on the edge of something the whole scene. You were at a more dangerous pitch than everybody else was. Like, you were so pissed when you were talking about like how someone would have an abortion because the timeline wasn't convenient.
I know, you were
spitting it out through you were like." It's like, geez, whoa. This is not even happening to you.
Yeah. What is it? Yeah, because I was very like, fuck it. Just because he's in law school? No, man. Like, I was very upset about it. It's because I was upset about what I was saying.
I could tell.
It was just so...
Hey, listen. Again, this is another significant and sincere narrative question here. Did Teresa and Julian kick it, or did he rape her?
Well, they didn't have.
So it's not Julian's baby for real?
Yeah, I think it's Ethan's baby.
What? So why does she think it's Julian Crane's baby?
Because they fell asleep and woke up together in the bed.
Does she not understand? Okay, never mind.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and Teddy Seats thinks that,
you know, yeah. The Bermuda thing, he got her drunk, and then he kind of just, like, he pussed out, like he didn't want to do it. She passed out.
Okay.
And then woke up, and he played, like, he's like, oh, yeah, we did. It was good for me. So she became pregnant, and then it was like, oh, this is Julian's baby. And that's kind of what the audience is like, oh, no, don't do it, Teresa. It's Ethan's baby.
Yeah, because that seems a little filthy. You know what I mean?
Like, even for Passions.
Exactly. I was like, wow. It, you know, because this is only like the third season that went to Julian having sex with her. I was like, that's nuts. So it's they're confused. She's confused is what it is.
Yeah. The thing with this scene, and we've talked about this before, the sort of moral universe within Passions and how in some cases they want, you know, the writers want characters to be horny. And that's good for the force of good. In other cases, they don't. But this abortion thing is an interesting, I don't know. I mean, I don't know which side it weights that on. Like, is it?
I think it abandons it entirely. And I think it's completely the writers wanting to get a rise out of people. That is 100%.
Oh, to make a buzzy kind of episode.
Yeah. Well, just to press buttons. You know what I mean? There's no calculus here.
But you have mentioned, or Natalie has mentioned that James Riley was Catholic, like a practicing Catholic. So I wonder if maybe, you know, like many Catholics, there's like some lines they won't cross. Like they'll do, you know, anything goes, but that I cannot do, you know, like.
Yeah, I think that was part of it. Absolutely. I think it was both, actually. I think it was a great way to grab headlines.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's guaranteed you to get on the cover of any, you know, soap rag to be like, Passions addresses, you know, abortion this week. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we got.
Hey, Travis, do you think Ethan would have grown up to be MAGA?
That's a good question. No, I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know why, but I just think he just wouldn't buy into it. He'd just be like, well, no, that doesn't make sense. That guy reminds me of my father that I thought I had.
So he'd be more like a Mitt Romney conservative.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, like Lynn Cheney kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah, like a true old-fashioned fiscal conservative.
Okay.
Right, right. Yeah, like this is parties being taken ransom kind of thing. I it's funny talking about the baby. I actually met the guy who played my son, grown-up son.
What?
Yeah, like Ethan, that baby grew up and on the show.
How old did he get on Passions?
Like teenager.
But they jumped time or something?
Well, yeah, what is it they call that something? Natalie looked this up a while ago.
Yeah, like rapidly aging child.
Right, rapidly aging children. They'll be like, you know, and it's like, they're toddlers already. And then it's like, all right, they're starting school today.
Oh, so, like Methuselah syndrome?
No.
That's a real thing.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but this is about the timelines not hooking up. Like, you know, the 45-year-old parent aging naturally while the child ages up to somewhere where you can hire a 12-year-old.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Because otherwise you're never going to shoot anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Like no one ever. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Right. Exactly.
I'm with you. Like, I'm with you now.
And so we did this fan event, and he was there, and he's like, "Hey, what's up, Dad?" And I was like, "Oh man, I haven't watched the show in a while."
That is weird.
Yeah, it was funny. I was like, that's funny, because I was the one who did it.
Yeah, your baby.
I did it.
Did anyone have a problem? And I know this is a common problem with films, fiction, television, and film, but did anyone have a problem with them basically discussing this very sensitive abortion issue in the wide open of the cafe? Or did you buy it because it's TV? I mean, there's tropes that we accept, right? Like, you know, people not saying goodbye when they hang up the phone, and we all just kind of live with those. But there are others that people start to question. Like,
yeah, I mean, you're a writer and you're a practicing writer, so those things are more at the forefront of your mind all the time. I'm watching a show where an ice block full of charity gets levitated. So like, I don't really think about that, you know?
I just want there to be rules that work at some place.
No, I do. I get it. I'm not making fun of you. I'm just saying like, that's the difference in where your head is right. at as opposed to where mine's at.
Right.
You know?
Right. Like, I mean, I don't feel it so much in the book cafe, but I definitely feel it when, you know, Tabitha is narrating what Kay's doing 6 feet from her.
Yes.
That's totally where it comes
right in front of her and doesn't see her.
Yes. So that's my, like, a similar thing, like just ignoring the laws of, like, physical distance.
Yeah. Well, it's not even, in that case, it's not even the proximity. In that case, it's like, what is the narrative use of this? Like, I'm watching it happen. And it's like you're doing literal play by play.
It happened all the time on the show because you'd read the script at home and you'd say, oh, okay, so I'm spying on somebody in this scene, and then you'd show up to work and the set would be this big.
Right, right, right. And you're like,
and you'd go, wait a second, are you serious? I'm gonna stand here and talk about them right there. You know, it's kind of like why, you know, the Crane Mansion, everything's so big because it's great. It's a mansion. It's huge. You know, but then when they're in the Lopez Fitzgerald kitchen, it's small and people are talking about each other and they're 4 feet away. Like, it just doesn't work. And I think that's what happened with that set.
Sure.
With, you know, they like, here's the bridge and then there's the block of ice. And it's like, okay, we'll just have separate camera shots.
Yeah.
And then except when she crosses into the other one, there's, you know what I mean? So yeah. That happens. I mean,
it's more like a play. You know what I mean?
It's exactly like a play. So it was one of those, in your mind, you saw it as like, oh yeah, we're hiding in the bushes. And then the director comes and stages you standing right there in the open and you go, well, why don't I stand behind the bushes? Like, well, cause then we have to deal with cameras.
Right.
Yeah.
So, that's a good point that you make about it being a play. Cause I mean, I don't want to again go too far into the philosophy of how we receive stories, but there's things that you'll accept on a stage that you won't accept on film or on TV or
100%
less difficulty.
I don't even think it's just because of tradition. I think that part of it is you bought your ticket, you take the ride, you're sitting there. Yeah. You're like, well, I'm in this space, like only. You know, I have to be an actual naysayer to be like, oh, that doesn't seem realistic. Whereas when you watch television and stuff, you just assume, well, they have money and a budget and time and resources.
Yeah.
They should fix this. You know, it's exactly. it's just a whole different set of expectations that happen in real time.
I mean, yes. but there are times in Passions, sorry, Travis, there are times in Passions when it's almost like, it's not much different than if you go see an improv show at UCB and they're like, here's,
100%.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. No, I actually kind of like that. I do, like in a perverse way. I kind of like that. It's like, you know, and voila, this stick is now a sword.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, on stage, you can create, you know, a distance within inches, you know, and that's the beauty of this stage.
Speaking of big blocks of ice, do you guys want to talk about Tabitha?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh wait, no. The one thing I forgot. Oh no, it's fine. We'll move on. Yes, let's talk about Tabitha because it was great. This is the first one of these that I've done where I was like, all right, I have to sit down because I'm going to talk with the gang about Passions, and I was able to instantly when Kay shows up with blood all over her face right out of the box, I could write "fuck yeah" in like huge letters on my paper. And feel really good about it. I was like, excellent. There's going to be one of these things in this episode. You know, this is batshit. This is what I'm here for. And I love it. So I just love this whole section, almost everything about it.
Yeah.
With the exception, like you said, Trav, Tabitha narrating from the trees was a little like, you know, a hat on a hat. But the rest of it's a blast.
Yeah, it was.
I wrote fuck yeah like four times in this section. You know?
Yeah, I thought this would be like a great, like this could easily have been like a Buffy episode, you know, or a storyline on Buffy or some other supernatural drama.
Ben, will you tee up this section real quick?
Yeah. So basically what's happening is Tabitha and Timmy are watching Kay. She's doing she's casting a spell to get rid of her rival, her romantic rival.
And cousin.
And I didn't know they were cousins until now.
That spell goes, bad cousin, good cousin, naughty and nice. Let the former prevail. let the ladder turn to ice.
Boom.
Which is like hilarious and fucking excellent. Like the rhythm poetically is just fucking terrible. It starts to sound very clinical. The former and ladder is really funny to me.
Yeah.
You know, let the ladder of the two people in question turn to ice, please. It just seems really funny.
It's also weirdly relative to the spellcaster, because if I'm the spellcaster, then I've obviously not the, you know, I'm the nice one. Even though for the viewers, Charity's the nice one. So it's kind of a good utility spell.
You just blew my mind.
It can never backfire on you.
Right. That's kind of, it's open to interpretation. Yeah. Anybody can use the book. The Book of Spells is user friendly.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes. The whole point of the Book of Spells is to be yourself and have fun. That's what that's all about.
Right.
The spell succeeds and Charity ends up in a block of ice while the rest of the teens are out playing hide and seek. There's Tito.
As she counts to 10, yeah.
I got a couple questions, all right? So yes, Kay is Charity's cousin, right?
Yeah, apparently.
Do we know anything other than that, Travis? Anything worth, because I was just like, if it weren't for the fact that she says cousins, you know, in the spell, I wouldn't have known.
Right. Well, it's Charity, that's how Charity ended up living at that house, because there was tragedy all around her life and her, you know, it's like her sister's sister kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody, you know, again, just like, what did you call it, Ben? Unlucky people, whatever, bad stuff keeps happening to them.
Oh, disaster magnet? Calamity magnet?
Catastrophic, whatever.
Yeah.
And now, here's my other legitimate narrative question, which is, why is Tabitha so invested in Miguel falling in love with Kay?
Power.
Yeah, it's...
Power.
Yeah, if Kay and Miguel kick it, then she gets magic power.
Her powers get.
Yeah. And this is again, one of those. Yeah. That's what it is. And this is one of those weird things about the moral universe, because so the audience is actively rooting for Charity to have sex with Miguel, because if she loses her virginity to him, then she gains power, like the power of good. So she'd be a good witch at that point. So.
Wait. Oh, so she's trying to. She doesn't want Charity to gain power.
Right.
She wants Kay. So it's less about Kay being with Miguel than about Kay removing Miguel from Charity.
Yes. She has to. It's a cock block, Val. It's a cock block.
It's a good old fashioned cock block 101.
Yeah.
Cock block city.
Magic cock block.
Yeah. This is not your grandpa's cock block.
No.
Yeah. All right.
This is for, okay. For all the marbles.
This actress playing Kay.
But this is the K this is the K we've lived with for most of the episodes, I think.
Really? I had no idea. I had no idea about K at all before I did this. Yeah.
It's one of those things, like, I think what Molly did with that character, which this is what I want to know. I want to know if she was directed that way or if she talked to writers.
So Molly is K?
No.
No.
Molly's Charity.
Molly with Charity, yeah.
Okay, like, got it.
Charity.
Yeah.
And I think with Kay, I don't think anyone really helped her out with, like, here's a way to go with this. I think she was just left up to her own devices and a young actor in that. I mean, like, what? You want me to do? Read this weird, bad poems and blood with, like, disgusting fake blood dripping down her eyes and her face. I mean,
yeah, that was rad.
She was just overwhelmed. You know what I mean? Like, that is a lot to ask of a young actor. You know, it's a lot to ask of any actor, really.
There's never any good fake blood, am I right?
It's all really bad.
See, I mean, again, didn't bother me. Did not bother me.
No, I mean for an actor. I'm not talking about
blood,
but I'm talking if you're an actor and you're like, all right, tomorrow is your big scene with the fake blood. Every actor I know is like, oh shit. It's gonna be sticky, it's gonna be nasty.
Yeah, no, it's nasty, it's bad for your skin. It's just like it's shitty. Yeah.
You have like a reddish pink arm for about 2 days.
And always stains. And inevitably the special effects person is like, this is a special formula. We put some dish soap in there so it won't stain your clothes. Never works. It always stains.
So Kay encases Charity in ice.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Which is dope as fuck. And now that's the Charity's face. I think she's great. Charity's face in the ice was super cool looking and super awesome.
Disagree.
And could have could have been a Cronenberg. That whole thing could have been a Cronenberg movie.
I thought,
or it could have been Land of the Lost. Either one.
That's where I'm headed. That's where my head's at. She looked like an unfrozen cave woman lawyer.
I love the face she was pulling. I thought it was great.
It didn't even. I mean, it's hard to do. It was funny because it didn't look so. It looked not at all like her.
Yeah, so much better. You ever see a dead person? You're like, oh my god, they look so different when they're dead.
Yeah.
It was curious to me. I want to know, like, why they picked that face. Like, that was the face of surprise. Like, oh.
Well, and also,
yeah, like, oh shit.
Oh no, I'm crazy.
Exactly. I loved it. Right. And they were like, okay, you know, Molly, just like make your eyes look terrified. Like, make a big frozen face.
Yeah, make a big frozen face. And then they probably made it after that. You know what I mean?
It was excellent. It was excellent. Ben's wrong. I'm right.
It was fun. It was cool.
I enjoyed the special effects of this because it really worked.
Yeah, it was like kind of Doctor Who-y, like old-fashioned Doctor Who.
Did look like 1970s Doctor Who.
The turns him into ice. I say, fuck yeah. Levitates the ice. I say, fuck yeah again. Spins the ice. I'm saying fuck yeah. Like, I just loved it.
By the way, did you guys appreciate Kay's thorough job of getting rid of the book?
I don't remember that.
Well, so she's like cleaning. She does a great job of cleaning the blood using snow. But then she just basically she's like, oh, there's a bush. I'll put this very important book of spells here. And then just leaves it.
Just tosses into the bush?
Yes. And I wrote, just put that book anywhere, Kay.
I think it was like, oh, crap, she's got this big book. What does she do?
That's afterthought.
Yeah.
Bring
in a bush.
One of the things I love about Passions and love about Tabitha is that her plans are always overly complicated with so many areas that they can go wrong, so many pitfalls that are possible.
That brings me to another, like, sort of larger overarching question that I have about this whole thing. I'm watching Tabitha and Timmy in an episode that is like got fully one-third supernatural shit. And I was like, wouldn't it have been better if instead of playing Tabitha, like a sitcom witch, she had been played like Dracula or like Maleficent or like some like grand arch thing. And everybody else still responded the same way. Like, she was like, you know,
isn't it how they treated Barnabas in Dark Shadows? It's like, oh yeah, that's our neighbor. He's a vampire.
Yeah, but I think they were all kind of doing like that old fashioned Hammer horror style of like, there was always thunder and shit like that. Like, that whole world was different. Passions makes pretense at being like a little town. Come to our little town. And there's this weird thing, which is this witch with a doll who talks, right?
Yeah.
And I was just like, as much as, cause you guys have sort of praised Juliet's performance, and I see why, because it is super weird thing to do.
Yeah.
But just conceptually, wouldn't it have been cool if she were more like straight up, like doing straight up Dracula shit? You know what I mean? Like, you know, Timmy, you know, like that outfit. Kind of.
I love her outfit. I'm like, this is just.
Can't stop, amazing. Won't stop.
You know, like the hand warmer.
Yeah, the muffler.
The muffler, exactly. So funny.
Oh, I have a technical question for you. Was the snow, was that like cornstarch?
No, that was snow.
Oh.
That was snow. Wow. Snow from the snow cone machine. Yeah, it was real snow. And then that ice that they were on, they were skating, that's like plastic.
Okay.
That's like the stuff they put downtown LA. But they put down real snow because you can hear the sound of it and stuff.
Yeah, so. That's what I was wondering.
I liked I liked the kids' like horror movie energy, like they're running around and stuff. I like Reese's like large dork energy. First time I've gotten to watch
so large.
You know, he's very comfortable with his large dork energy. I think that's rad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's my favorite. Just because he's.
Is he really?
I don't even know if he has some sort of like weird speech thing that he does that just is very endearing to me. And he is always using it to accuse people. I mean, he is truly a Salem witch hunt leader. He's, you know, a person.
Yeah, it's like a toddler.
He's calling people out.
Like a toddler kind of voice thing, like, oh yeah, I'll get you.
Yeah. Well, that's what Charity wanted us to do. She's going to smoke us out.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so.
Speaking of all that, I wrote Miguel is hilarious. Miguel is hilarious. Kay should freeze him. Miguel was too goddamn funny. He like shows up, says every like thought that's in his brain.
Yes.
And she like kind of makes her reconsider. I was like, she should just do that shit to him. Freeze him. That'd be awesome.
He's a bit of a goldfish brain. Quick question about fashion and costumes. What was everyone's opinion of the flashback sequence with Kay and her giant purple Mario Brothers hat? And I've just given away my opinion.
I don't remember it.
It was the biggest baseball hat I've ever seen in my life. And maybe she's just a tiny, tiny person, but it was huge.
What was happening in the Kay flashback?
The Father Lonergan.
Yes, yes.
I was mesmerized. Yeah, I remember. I was mesmerized by the blind priest. Like freaks me out every time. Yeah.
Putting a hat on an actor is always a bad idea.
Yeah,
it's just always going to be.
And they
bad
were inside
idea.
Too, right? Weren't they?
Exactly. Wasn't that like, you know, all right, let's go outside. I'm going to put my hat on, and it's like, why?
Because guess where the lights come from.
Yeah, exactly. So many bad.
Yeah, but that was the biggest purple hat I've ever seen. It was crazy. You should go back and watch Val. But I understand why you're mesmerized by Father Lonergan, because he is, it's hard to not watch him.
He's frightening. He's scary. He's scary. He's scary and blind, and he's got those white blind eyes, and he seems like he's like channeling voices from somewhere else, the way that he like kind of stands sort of looking off into the far distance.
Yeah.
The
actor really can't see anything either.
He's got contacts, right?
Yeah.
No, it's just like,
Jesus.
It's effective in a horror movie way, but when he's doing like conversation, it's very off-putting. You put on some shades or a hat. Maybe put on that purple hat, like Mario hat.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, Val. So.
Yeah, fully turned the other way. Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's freaky to me.
I have a question. I mean, maybe we've talked about this before, and if we have, then we can edit it out. But do you think, I mean, there to me is a correlation or to be made between Tabitha walking around town and what everyone would see is a woman walking around talking to a doll that is not alive. Is there any way this is inspired by the log lady from Twin Peaks who's walking around the town of Twin Peaks with a log?
It's got basically the same silhouette, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you saw it coming down the street, you'd be like, that's the log lady. Yeah. This you're walking me into my bigger point about the acting on the show. This is great.
Already. Can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think, Travis? Do you see some log lady there? You think like
I mean it's, you know, it might have seeped in, sure. Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, one is I mean, it could be.
I mean, I just can't believe like that the I can't thing. Believe that the yeah, that's interesting. I can't believe that the nexus of passions and Twin Peaks is coincidental. You know, I think it's like it wears its Twin Peaks fandom on its sleeve.
And I think some of that could be conscious and some could be.
And I think that at its absolute best, I think the show to me is obviously I'm a big Lynch fan, but the show is best when the closer it gets to fucking Ethan screaming from hell with the closet and all that stuff. I can watch a lot of that, you know. I can watch way more of that than I can the politics between the families and all of that stuff in this particular setting. When it goes big and cosmic and interdimensional, I actually enjoy, straight up enjoy Passions, you know.
Yeah, it's the same thing with X-Files, that kind of thing. You're always like, you'd be waiting for it, and then you'd go, oh, this is just a filler episode. It's not something about the big, creepy aliens and the Russians.
Yeah,
they solve a mystery.
Yeah. I don't need a Mulder, Scully, will they, won't they thing. You know what I mean? I need, like, frog people and fucking black holes and
all
shit like
time.
That. You know?
All the time.
Yes. Yes, 24/7.
Well, I think even Travis, you're onto something because when I was watching X-Files, I actually got annoyed when they would do a mystery of the week. I wanted to mainline the serial mystery, like the big mystery. And I think that's what you're talking about, right? Like not even the.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Like I don't give a shit about this werewolf. Yeah, let's talk about the aliens.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it was like that.
You told me the truth was out there. Yeah. That brings me to what I was saying earlier about the measure of the acting.
Yes, let's hear it.
Because it's interesting. It's a moving line with a show like this. A lot to consider when you really try to be like, do I think that this performance, this whatever given performance it is, do I think this is good? And by good, I don't mean like award winning or, I mean, like, does it function narratively? Does it have something moving and integral about it and all that? And it occurred to me watching, what? You find that to be impossible?
You're talking about passions here, man.
Well, no, but that's like, you can also, there are people who have qualities about them, performers that have qualities about them, that they can walk sideways into that kind of thing. They have a light inside of them that shines no matter what, no matter how bad the material is. You see something there, you know? Because, like, in this episode, I wasn't kidding. I thought you were good. I thought, like, what was her name? Is it Lynn? Was it the girl?
The characters,
was,
yeah.
The girl, yeah. I thought she was good. And it kind of, like, and there were others, you know, Mackenzie. But it was, like, to me, it became, like, Lynn and you, in particular, Ethan, Travis, are the best measures of this. It was, like, to me, it was, like, would it play on Twin Peaks The Return? Like, on not the old Twin Peaks, but on like the 2017, 17 hour Twin Peaks, would what this person's doing play under those circumstances? And I think that when I'm watching Passions, that's the way I see what is good and what is bad. Hmm. You know, because that's right. A world that's that allows, you know, like Naomi Watts is doing a weird performance in Twin Peaks The Return, but it's good. You know, she, has, you know, yeah, it's a real performer's storyteller's shamanistic ability to do something interesting because you're motivated to, you know?
And I think Molly did that really well.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100%.
She is like the Naomi Watts of Passions.
Yep. I agree. Yeah. I think she's really good.
Yeah.
Her physicality at the end is truly creepy. She's got a weird little, you know, thing she's doing with her body.
Yeah.
Totally. Like if that were shot on film with good lighting instead of under those circumstances, it would burn itself into your brain.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
How about that hard cut from her evil smile to the beautiful Irish pipes of harmony?
Oh, loved it. I wish they had cut on the camera move. Like the camera was still pressing in and then they cut. Yeah. That would be great.
Yeah, we ran out of time. We got to go. We got to show the fucking credits.
They frequently do that hard cut, but this one was really, really hard. I was like, wow, not even like silence for a little bit. Not even cut to black. We're going to go straight to the Enya style.
It's the best. Yeah, to the tin whistle. It's the best.
I want to ask you guys about the kind of delay when the evil charity appears. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's more obvious in the next episode, but that where everyone's standing in the room wondering who this person is, but no one's saying anything. And then I was just like, I'm like, and then the narration starts. When Charity shows up, they're like, she can't talk. You know, the evil Charity, she can't say anything. And Case is kind of standing there going, what has happened? What are you? And it takes so long for that to happen. And I'm like, what is the...
I didn't get to that. That's in 625.
You guys didn't know that? I think it's more obvious in the second one.
Yeah.
Because more of that episode.
Because evil Charity just kind of like pops. It's the very last thing that happens in 624.
It's in the next one. Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Guys, what about themes? It's time for themes.
Oh, where's mine? I wrote it down somewhere. Hold on. You guys go first.
Travis, you want to go?
Yeah, I got, I got love may get you a baby, but love don't pay the bills.
That's good.
Okay. More of a song title than a theme, but we'll go with it.
Yeah. My theme is Ethan says, choose life.
Ooh, yeah. I like it. Ethan Say. It should be Ethan Say.
Yeah.
Mine is sort of layered because I had a Benjamin Hayes moment of did she just say what I thought she said? Yeah. And I had to rewind it four times. It was during the Teresa's flashback when she's talking to not Whitney but somebody else about how she's having Julian's baby, and she says really low, what I thought she said was, I can't delete the truth. And I was like, wow, what a weird line. I can't delete the truth. It's kind of shitty, but at least it's something interesting to listen to. And I was like, there's no way. There's no way. And I went back and listened to it several times. It was, I can't tell Ethan the truth, is what she said.
But she ran it. She ran it through.
She ran it through. But anyway, my theme is I can't delete the truth. That's my theme.
That I'm going with that. That should also be the Washington Post new theme after.
That should be on the letterhead. Yeah. Instead of democracy.
Can't delete the truth.
I think that's it.
Yeah, we got to get to the housekeeping because it's time for that.
Oh, so housekeeping.
Yeah.
Here we go. I will say that we finally got over 100 star ratings on iTunes, yes, which is fantastic.
Woo-hoo!
But because I'm not on the podcast every week, I can come here without losing too much self-respect and beg you. I'm begging you to get on there and give us 5 stars, because the more star ratings we get for this show that we don't make a dime for making, the more that it helps us. Reviews, all of that stuff. Yeah. Another thing, obviously, tell a friend. If you're into this, please, please. Once again, I'm not here every week so I can do this. I am begging you to please go out there and tell and spread the word and evangelize for our little show that we do. Other than that, at Passions4 on Twitter. On Instagram, we are Passions for Life Pod. You can email Travis and Natalie and Ben if you're feeling frisky. Ask Ben a question at emailpassions@gmail.com. I think that is all of the housekeeping. I wish Natalie will be back. She is not here, obviously, this week because she's making a major television show for the National Broadcasting Corporation.
Don't forget the little video there. There, Val. Don't forget the
supplemental video.
Supplemental video.
That's right. Yeah. There is at the bottom of every show description, you'll see the ways you can communicate with us. And then at the very bottom, you just say where it says, click here for supplemental video, and you can go watch along with us and just re-experience your entire Passions experience.
That's right. And next episode, we'll be talking about 625, episode 625 next podcast episode.
Yes.
Right. More evil charity.
Hashtag charity clarity.
Charity clarity. We will hopefully achieve more charity clarity. We love you. This is Valentine out.
Ben out.
And Travis out. And hope maybe we'll see if Natalie's with us next week. Maybe not. We'll see.
No, I think we should do 625 and then bring her back. We'll do one more than
we bring her back.
Okay, bye.
Bye.